could call it prophetic that this Sunday, two days after massive global climate strike demonstrations took place around the world, Jesus tells us today this parable about two men who know the truth beyond the grave about what God's justice is really like. Is it really too little, too late? We who in this day and time witnessed this past Friday youth activists from around the world and those who stand with them to gather in solidarity at climate strike events calling for a climate emergency. Were any of you at the legislature this week? Yeah? We too, here in Machozen, answered a call to ring our church bells at the old church. Throughout history, church or community bells have been called to wake, to pray, to work, to arms, to celebrate in times of crisis, and they've also called us as a community to come together. In World War II, in Great Britain, all the church bells were silenced and rang only to inform of any invasion by enemy troops. And this is why we were called to ring the bells a couple of days ago. With only 11 years to reduce our carbon emissions by 45% in order to avoid irreversible climate disruption, the ringing of the church bells around the world was signaling a warning to wake up to this new reality for the sake of those who would be alive to bear the consequences. I think it's really wonderful that we participated in that, and there were churches around the world that did as well. And some of those future caretakers of the earth joined us on Friday. It was lovely. Teacher Erin from the Machozen Preschool traipsed her bright young class along with a few parents over to St. Mary the Virgin, where some of us met and opened the doors and gathered with them to ring the church bells as a sign of hope and care for the earth, for each other, and for the future. Teacher Erin, as we were sitting on the bench, she told the excited preschoolers, "The bells will say it's time to wake up and time to care for the earth." And they were very young. Cadence was there. And they seemed to understand that caring for the earth is a good thing. And they also seemed to understand that ringing the bell is a good thing. It was a good reminder that we are all caretakers. As we stood together, seeing those whom we leave the earth for. In Luke's gospel for today, we are introduced to two men, one of which lives completely unseen. One is a rich man who lives lavishly, dressed in the finest and the most expensive clothes, feasting every day. And one is the poorest of the poor, covered in sores and propped up at the gate of the rich man's house, where on a good day he might be able to survive on the crumbs that fall from the rich man's table. The trickle-down effect, I suppose. The contrast between these two men is obvious. The haves and the have-nots, the insider and the outsider, the privileged and the disadvantaged, the powerful and the powerless, the seen and the unseen. And yet, they are both human, made in the image of God. In the parable, both men die, but end up in different places. Lazarus, whose name means God is my help, is carried away by angels, while the rich man finds himself in Hades, which is the underworld of Greek mythology. Which is to say that the rich man, this unnamed Jew, is as far away from his God as he can get. When he looks up from his torment to finally see Lazarus at the side of Abraham, an image that speaks of intimacy and care, he calls out to Abraham for mercy and asks him to send Lazarus to alleviate some of his anguish, as if Lazarus would love nothing better than to be of service to a man who thought nothing of him in life, except maybe how he could be of service. In death, it seems that little has changed. But But instead of granting the rich man's wish, Abraham leaves him in the pit of despair without much promise of nearness to God, even though he is addressed and claimed by the word and as child. Child, remember that during your lifetime, you received good things, and Lazarus in like manner received bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you, child, are in agony. The real reversal of power that young Mary sings about in her revolutionary Magnificat. Between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can pass from there to us, Abraham says. What are we to make of that? Too little, too late? For this rich man with so many blind spots, what does that mean for him? What do you mean there's a chasm, a hole, a void, a rift, a break, a split? The rich man with blind spots is used to his privilege to make things happen, to negotiate for his benefit, regardless of the impact to others. Then send Lazarus to warn my brothers, he says, to no avail. No matter what Abraham says, the rich man does not seem to get what is happening. In life, there exists a marked imbalance of power between the rich man and Lazarus. And while the man had the ability to reach out to help Lazarus, he didn't. It isn't that he didn't know Lazarus, though, because he calls him by name. He knows him. And even in death, he expects and feels entitled to Lazarus' servitude. Even in death, the rich man holds to his position of wealth and power and expects Lazarus to understand the proper order of things. Even in death, this rich, unnamed man cannot see what he's missing. He only sees what he wants to see. This is how chasms work. Whether the chasm is physical, the gate that stands between the rich man and Lazarus, the distance that separates them after death, or a result of the profound differences that exist between people in our lives, our beliefs, our opinions, our wealth, our power, our race and authority, we live with chasms that exist and persist all around us, separating us from one another, so that we are not known to one another. It's interesting that Lazarus was called by name. It's interesting what being named can do. Tomorrow, the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation, on this Orange Shirt Day, 2019, will release at a ceremony at the Canadian Museum of History in Ottawa a first list of the known names of the Indigenous children who died while at residential school. In our lifetime, in our midst, while we didn't see or we didn't look. With every name read tomorrow, a family's legacy of pain will be seen. Right here, all along. Is this too little, too late? Consider for a moment the chasms that have been created between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, between political parties that are supposed to care for the communities that elect them, the voids, the rifts, the splits that have at one time existed or do exist now in our lives. Family, friends, neighbors, religion, theology, church canon law, in this very church family. I think we can all imagine what chasms look like, what it feels like to be on one side or another. The truth is that chasms, whatever form they take, not only separate us from one another, but they separate us from God. Our demands and pleading don't usually eliminate our blindness, and so chasms remain and we wonder why we cannot pass from one side to the other. Please, God, please. This can't possibly be too little, too late. Jesus' parable, as told to us in Luke, is connected to the larger narrative that we've heard throughout the season of Pentecost that challenges us to look at the call and the cost of Christian discipleship. It is a call to who we are. Over the last month in particular, we have heard the parables that invite division, call us to give up all of our possessions, our perspectives, to look out for the lost, and to account for our management of our wealth. None of these parables suggest that following Jesus will be easy or offer simple solutions. Each one does, however, challenge us to think about our priorities, our fallibility, our selfishness, our sinfulness, which is our tendency to turn our gaze away from God and towards ourselves, curving in on ourselves until we can't really see what's happening around us. It's how we are sometimes, and how we would miss Lazarus right here in our midst, or feel like Lazarus ourselves, suffering alone. These parables invite us to listen and to be open to what God is up to in the world, in our neighborhoods, in our congregation, in our lives. Can we hear the church bells ringing? Wake up. It's time to wake up and to allow God to call us to God's side. It's time for our gaze to be shifted outwards. It's time, right on time, God's time. Not too early and not too late to be part of God's care. Because God has a plan. This is why we read these stories of our faith every Sunday and in between, because God has a plan. It's a big plan. And at times it's a strange plan. And as Mary sang in her Magnificat, it is always a radical plan. This plan involves you and me and the rich and the poor and the lost and the found, the sinner and the righteous and the privileged and the marginalized, the seen and the unseen. God's plan is one which seeks to bridge the chasm that separates us from one another. Chasms that separate us from the land that sustains us, from the water that we drink and the food that we eat for our survival. Like the rich man and his brothers, we too hear about God's plan for us and for the world, from Moses and the prophets, but also from the Gospels that proclaim the good news of God's Word made flesh. Jesus lived among us, teaching and embodying God's plan with his face set towards Jerusalem. A plan so radical, his obedience to it led to his crucifixion and death. A plan so radical that death did not have the final word when Jesus himself rose from the dead. It is the cross of Jesus that bridges the chasm between us and our selfish ways. It always has been. And our inward desires, it is the cross of Jesus that provides healing and reconciliation in the midst of disease and oppression. It always has been. It is the cross of Jesus that offers us forgiveness and opens our eyes and wakes us up when we ought to be condemned. It is the cross of Jesus that gives us hope when we experience despair. It is the cross of Jesus that gives us life always, even in the midst of death. Despite our own chasms, this parish, you good and faithful servants made Blackberry Festival happen in this place as it has, year after year after year, despite the chasms. Wasn't it wonderful to throw our doors open yesterday? Welcoming indiscriminately, people with money to buy our pies. But think of who set foot in this place yesterday. Think of who we ate with together and who we worked beside. chatted to and shared in the merciful grace and hospitality of Jesus, who reconciles all things in God's good and perfect timing. It was a glimpse of God's kingdom, complete with blackberry jam. Despite our own chasms, we continue to journey with Jesus the Christ, in whom we put our trust and who promises us a life that we can barely trust on our own. But we gather in God's deep hope for a world free of sorrow and a world steeped in God's justice, as the prophets and Moses and the gospel tells us. Gathered together at the foot of the cross, with our hands outstretched, at this table, God meets us in the bread and in the wine, in the water and in the word. God's kingdom come. Amen.